Welcome to the Membership Machine Show, talking you through your membership website from initial idea all the way to finished product. Here's your host, Jonathan Denwood.
Welcome back, folks, to the Membership Machine Show. This is episode 81. In this episode, we're going to be talking about WordPress performance with a focus around a membership or community membership website. What are the key things that you need to know in 2024? I've got my regular co-host with me, Haroon. So, Haroon, would you like to quickly introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Thank you, Jonathan, and hi, everyone. So I've been working in the tech industry for around 2.5 decades and with WordPress for over almost a decade and a half. Excuse me. And over the years, I've worked with pretty much every tool under the belt when it comes to WordPress. And during this time, I've had to optimize my client sites to sell them when they started experiencing lots of traffic. So that's what today's show is going to be all about, because the performance of a website dictates what sort of traffic can it serve in an efficient manner without your users pulling their hair out because the site is taking way too long to load. So yeah, that's where we're coming from.
That's fantastic. Like I say, we're going to be talking about the different types of hosting provider, PHP workers, a host of different things. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of the show, I've got a couple messages from our major sponsors. We'll be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. I want to point out that we've got some great special offers you can get from the sponsors, and a curated list of the best plugins for a membership website. You can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals, and you'll find all the goodies there. So let's go straight into it, Haroon. So I think then let's start about the different types of hosting solutions out there. Obviously, we provide hosting at WP Tonic, but I think I can still be reasonably balanced about the competition and the different offerings out there. We're not going to mostly talk about any specific solution, but there's different types like shared hosting, VPS, managed WordPress hosting. So what are some of the key things that you think people need to know, Harold?
First and foremost, you've got to differentiate between two types of hosting. One is just cookie cutter hosting sites that aim to sell as many accounts as possible without really caring too much about providing any personalized service, without being particular about having their clients deliver the best experience to their visitors. They just want to sell as many accounts as possible. And then there's the type of hosts that actually care about your site performing well on their hosting, that actually care about providing you with the right tech stack, with the right tools to help you run your site on it in an efficient manner to help you serve traffic in an efficient manner. So you've got to differentiate between these two type of hosts. And you've got to avoid a lot of mainstream hosts that are owned by the same company. We're not going to name names, but they run data centers cramped with old hardware usually and put as many sites as possible on each server. And the support is usually very lackluster as well. You've got to avoid those. You better pick a hosting provider that actually cares about your site as well.
Yeah, it's very confusing for people, isn't it, Haroon? Because that you've got different types of hosting provider with different business models, and then you've got a host of new technologies that have come around in the hosting area around cloud hosting. Some of these terms, shared hosting, that's just like what the kind of normal model where you've got to serve and just have shared hosting resources is, it's all been kind of mixed up with cloud solutions as well. But the fundamentals are still there. What Haroon said, the cheaper hosting providers, they're about cramming as many websites on a particular solution as possible. I think on these discount providers, even if they're trying to persuade you to sign up for a more expensive hosting account from them, I personally wouldn't utilize them because I just don't think their technology and their business model will really work with a membership and a community membership website that's got a reasonable amount of members. I think you're going to have problems. But with the more better hosting solutions that come from very reputable companies like WP Engine or Kinsta or similar, you can still have problems because they will help you out a lot more and have much better support. But their business model relies a lot, or their technology stack relies a lot on caching. And caching is really an enemy of having a membership and a community membership website that has a really good experience for the students and the end users. Would you agree with some of the things I've outlined, Aaron?
I'll agree. And I'll add here a bit more description about the sort of hosting setups we're talking about. So some of these hosts, the typical shared host, they operate on the basis of just running hardware servers stacked up in racks that are just like every server has limited resources and the servers cannot be scaled. You can't just simply add more RAM to a server within seconds. Someone actually has to go in and plug more RAM into that hardware computer. Same goes for CPUs and all. And then there are cloud hosts that have sort of virtualized the infrastructure in a way that there's very little friction when it comes to adding more resources to a particular client's hardware, because that particular client is given virtualized CPU, virtualized RAM, and adding more RAM, adding more CPU just takes minutes and doesn't actually involve a person physically walking into the data center and plugging in more hardware, because they've already got huge data centers with all the hardware configured in a way that they can serve their clients' virtualized versions of that hardware at will. So that's the difference between typical shared hosting and cloud hosting. That's where choosing cloud hosting is more beneficial to sites that may need to scale at any given time, that may need to start serving more traffic at any given time. So that's the distinction between shared and cloud. And some people are under the impression that cloud isn't shared, which is wrong. Cloud hosting is also shared. You are sharing VPS resources when you're on, let's say, DigitalOcean or Vulture or AWS. But at the same time, you can scale easily. That's the main difference between shared and cloud hosting. And then there's managed and unmanaged. So unmanaged hosts just give you a control panel and the hardware resources tied to it, and then you run everything on it. You deploy the site, you take care of backups, you take care of security. other than server level security and backups. And managed hosts give you a lot more tools. They give you a lot, like properly managed hosts, they give you a lot more hand-holding too at times, depending on the provider and the package you've got with them. So that can also go a long way towards running a successful business site beyond just a brochure site that gets, you know, some odd traffic on and off. And then there are fully managed hosts who practically act as technology partners with you, who help you make tech decisions rather than just providing you with a pre-built solution. And those are generally the most expensive, but worth every penny, in my opinion, for any serious business. Now, coming to what Jonathan said about caching. So caching is, I think, the most major factor when it comes to sites that involve a lot of user interaction, because we're going to discuss it in detail in the next few topics today, in which we are going to discuss caching in particular. But caching doesn't really work the typical way for membership sites and for e-commerce sites and for e-learning sites and all. So as Jonathan mentioned, you have to make sure that you pick a host that doesn't just rely on serving as much data off the customer's cache as well.
Can you close in there? Oh, you come back. You're freezing a little bit. Hopefully you're on the right, your right network. You know, you need to check that.
Yeah, I should be on the right network.
Yeah. Well, right, you know,
freezing?
No, you come back, actually. It's not too bad. Okay. Right, so let's move on, because it is confusing. And the only other thing I would say is that when it comes to managed hosting in the WordPress space, folks, it's one of the most abused terms, in my opinion, in the WordPress hosting space. It's been utilized for all different types on kind of managed hosting, which I don't consider managed. It's got to the stage where it's become degraded as a term. So at WP Tonic, we say Word Hosting Plus, because we update all the plugins on all our client websites every week. If you're not on a Support Plus plan with us, if there's a problem with a plugin update, you've got to self-report it to us, but then we will sort it out as part of the normal hosting package. But like I say, it's been degraded to such an extent that in some ways it doesn't mean much. Let's move on then. The version, because I think it's linked to the cheaper kind of hosting providers, because a lot of them don't update the version of PHP. And then especially when more demanding membership and community focus, i.e. BuddyBoss websites, the amount of PHP workers that you have is important. What would you say about this, the PHP version, the PHP workers?
So with PHP, especially after version 5, since for quite a while, despite PHP 7 being out, lots and lots of hosts had continued to just stick with PHP 5 because that was the supported version, the earliest supported version from WordPress. But then over the past few years, they decided to upgrade to PHP 7. And some were very slow to upgrade to PHP 7. And since 8 came out, so every new PHP version since 7 has been adding substantial performance improvements. And if the host isn't supporting the latest and greatest PHP version, you're missing out on all the benefits of those improvements in PHP itself, because your site's code runs on PHP. WordPress runs on PHP. So you've got to pick a host that supports the latest versions of PHP. That's very important. And then when it comes to PHP workers are basically server processes. So if your site is on a, let's say, 8-core server, but you are assigned only one PHP worker, that means your site can only utilize one core of that server. The rest seven cores cannot be utilized at any given time. But if you are provided with, let's say, four PHP workers, that means four of those cores can be utilized at any given time. One PHP worker utilizing one server core to actually provide four times the performance, literally four times the performance when it comes to serving dynamic visitors, like visitors who are actually interacting with your site rather than just visiting a page. So let's actually now, before we move on further, let's now dig in. Otherwise, it's number seven on today's list. And I don't think we're going to be able to cover the entire list of this session today. Okay. We're going to split it. Yeah, we're going to have to split it into two. But I think we're going to move the caching bit up here rather than discussing it later. Mm-hmm. So let's discuss the types of caching. So caching is basically serving visitors data that was generated for a previous visitor. So let's say your server has just booted, you've just made your site live on it, and a visitor comes to the site does all the work, and it generates a page to be sent to the user. Now what the server can do is, with server level caching, the server can take a copy of that generated page and keep it in a separate fast storage area, so that when the next visitor comes requesting for the same page, requesting for the same resource, the server does not have to do all the grunt work of running PHP and then fetching the data from the database and putting it together in the format required and then serving it to users. PHP processing requires a lot of server resources, and then fetching data from the database requires even more server resources. So if the server doesn't have to do that repeatedly, it can serve more traffic. So if the full page cache is available, then the next visitor who requests the same resource is going to be served the version of the page that is in the cache. Now, that's one layer of cache. That's called full page server cache. Then there's opcode cache. So when PHP runs some code, it first compiles it into another form of code that's called opcode, which is what that computer actually runs. And with every request, if PHP is going to compile the code of that page into opcode, that's also going to take resources. If that code hasn't changed, that means that code doesn't need to be compiled on every single visit to that page. So with proper opcode caching, that code once compiled is kept and run for next subsequent visits without having to be recompiled. And then there's database caching. So whenever a site requests any data from the database, that is also kept in a cache. And for subsequent requests, that cached data can be used even by PHP rather than every single time having to go to the database server and fetch that data afresh. So all of these caching layers combined. And then there's browser cache. For example, the CSS files and JavaScript files can be set to be reused from your browser. You visit one page of a website and the CSS and JavaScript was loaded. Then you visit another page of the same website that uses the same styling because it's the same site and that uses pretty much same or similar JavaScript scripts. And images, logos, certain images that are shared across the site. If those resources were downloaded on a previous visit, they don't need to be downloaded again for your browser. So all of these caching layers combined can speed up a user's experience and can allow the server to serve more users at any given time. Now, the issue with membership sites is, if Jonathan is a member and I'm a member, as long as we don't log into the site, it's fine if we get served the same cached results. But the moment we log in, Jonathan needs a different page and I need a different page in the user dashboard, because Jonathan's dashboard will show Jonathan's progress, the courses Jonathan is enrolled in, and so on, while my dashboard will show my progress, the courses I'm enrolled in, the lesson I'm currently on. So being served the exact same cached page is no longer relevant. So for logged in users on e-commerce sites where there's cart activity, and for membership sites, for e-learning sites, it's important that we don't rely on full page caching. Although full page caching does come into play for pages that don't have different content, but we need servers that are way more efficient at database caching, Because if Jonathan and I are requesting the same list of courses, we're on a page that shows the same list of courses, then at least the query that is run to fetch that list of courses from the database doesn't need to be repeated. If Jonathan has visited the server, has returned that query, I can be shown that query results without, again, knocking at the door of the database to ask for the same results. So it's important that more nuanced caching, more per case basis caching is deployed in such cases. Opcode caching and database caching becomes way more important in such scenarios.
I think we've probably lost quite a few of the people listening to this, but the main thing I think you've got to get by listening to Haroon is that this can get complicated, folks. Well, what I mean by that, based on my experience, I have a fair bit of experience in my company. I'm more the person that deals with customers and marketing. Haroon has a more experience on the technical side of servers. But based on my experience, folks, a lot of people get into a bit of a hot mess. They can have multiple caching plugins installed. They can have caching as part of their server, and then you can add caching with what is called a CDN, which is a way of, that can be introduced into the mixture. So you can end up with a bit of a hot mess. Am I on the right if you don't have people? And that's why it's important to go with a provider that kind of specializes in this area a bit, because you can get into a bit of a hot mess here. Would you, am I on the right track here, Harold?
Yes, you are.
You are. So we covered the caching, then you got the host uses this different software. It used to be Apache, and how do you pronounce the one? Is it NIX?
Nginx.
Nginx. I always do that. And I think Nginx, not totally, I think there's some others out there as well, but Nginx, I think it was developed by Facebook, wasn't it? Originally, I think it's open source, isn't it?
But I think it's open source.
But I think it was originally developed by Facebook because they were having problems with the enormous data setup. And basically, this is a kind of, it's the software that on top where the website works with the hardware. It controls its various elements. And it's a really, if you're dealing with a more high performance website, which you are with a membership or community, you do really probably need Nginx. But I'm not sure if you would agree with that. What's your own view of that?
I agree. Although the differences have reduced over time, but Apache, which was like the standard HTTP web server from the early days of the internet, and Nginx have huge differences in the way they serve traffic. So in fact, Nginx was created because Apache couldn't serve a lot of concurrent users actively engaging with the site. That was why Nginx was created in the first place. And the differences were massive, massive. Till a few years back, the differences were massive. Even now, the differences are very, very substantial because Apache starts to lag when it starts serving many users at any particular given time interacting with the website. So the differences could be as much as like 10 times. It's not like 10% or 20% difference. It's more like 10x difference, 20x difference, which is huge. So choosing a server that runs Nginx goes a long way towards scaling your site compared to Apache. And then there's Lightspeed as well, which is another server technology.
That seems to be the main, it either seems Nginx or Lightspeed.
Lightspeed, yes.
I don't want to go too far because I think we can get through all this quick if we have. We're but Lightspeed with Nginx. Are there any real, when it comes to membership and BuddyBoss, are there any major differences between those two in performance?
One major difference for certain users who need to use Apache like HD access files, Nginx doesn't support HD access files for any custom rules. It has its own configuration format of files, which need to be set at in the server configuration level rather than at your in your sites folder. HD access files require either Apache or Nginx, and the free Lightspeed. And the free version of Lightspeed has limited support for HD access files, while the pro version, Lightspeed Enterprise, has better support for HD access files. I personally don't use HD access files.
What's the benefit of that support when it comes? Why is
so? The user can put a file called .htaccess in their document root and use it to change a lot of server directives. I personally am not a fan of that approach in the first place.
No, I'm not either. Right. Yeah. So let's go on to one more before we go for our break, and then we can bond through the others.
Right.
I think the other last thing I touched on it is CDNs. In my experience, adding this to a setup that's not been set up in the right way, you can get into a real witch's brew, as I put it. It sounds good. What a CDN is, folks, is a kind of form of caching at the server center. You can have your website hosted in North America. And if somebody was looking at the website in India, even though the information's been sent at light speed almost or getting close to it, there's going to be a lag. So to deal with that and to improve the situation, they can take a copy of the website, the images, and maybe audio or videos, and they can store them in data centers that are closer to the person that's viewing the website in India. So it makes the website seem to load quicker. If I've got the fundamentals right there, Haru?
Yes, yes, you do. So basically, if you're serving global traffic, if your visitors are spread all across the world, then having a CDN is very, very important, because then someone from a particular region requests, like visits your website, then the static data, which is the images, the audio, video, certain cases video, not all cases video, but certain cases video, and CSS files, JavaScript files, these static resources are going to get cached on the nearest data center to that visitor's location. And CDN providers have data centers all across the world. They could have like 100 locations across the world in which those copies are kept as soon as a user nearest to that particular data center requests your site. So for next visits, not just from that user, but from any user in that region, they're not going to have to download all of those static resources from your server. It has two benefits. Firstly, your server's bandwidth usage decreases because it doesn't need to supply the same resources to 100 users from a particular region. It needs to supply them to one user, and they're cached at the data center nearest to that user, the data center of the CDN provider. And subsequent users get those resources from that CDN provider. So your bandwidth usage per month decreases a lot if you're serving global traffic. And the other benefit is speed. Those people get better speed because they get lots of resources from a data center that is like 80 milliseconds away from them compared to your data center, which might be 1 second away from them.
I found out if it's not set up correctly and people, it's because some of those, there's circumstances where you can have multiple different caching instances, yeah, and it can cause a lot of confusion if it's...
Yes.
Am I about right about that?
Yes, you're right. So basically caching doesn't go well with sites that have content that's changing a lot. If a particular page is going to change, then the cached version needs to have this data added to it that this is the time for which this cache is valid. If, let's say, a cached page is valid for 24 hours, then within 24 hours, everyone is going to be served that cache page. If you make changes within those 24 hours, they are going to be reflected after 24 hours when the previous cache has expired, and then the new cached version is generated. If your site is changing every 15, 20 minutes, then you can't serve that part of a site as a cached page for 24 hours. For that, you might need to set up cache to expire within like half an hour, or maybe 20 minutes, maybe 15 minutes. So it all depends on being set up correctly based on your traffic, based on your particular site's requirements, rather than a one-size-fits-all solution.
Well, we're going to go for a mid-break, and then we're going to attempt to grasp you the hours. We've made quicker progress. I think we can get through most of it by the end of the show. So like I say, we're going to go for our break, folks. Got a couple messages from a couple of our sponsors. We'll be back in a few moments, folks.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. We've had a bit of a discussion about hosting. And don't worry, though, if you're going with the right hosting provider and the right setup, it goes pretty well. It's just that you've got to get things set up, and then it normally runs pretty sweet. But before we go into the other part of the show, I just want to mention that we've got a great Facebook community, Facebook group page, the Membership Machine Show. It's totally free, and you can get some free knowledge there. And it's a great little community of WordPress people and people building a business, a membership business on WordPress. And anything else you want to ask, like I say, just go to Facebook and put in Membership Machine Show, and the group should show up and you can join it. So let's move on. I found this on various lists, Premier DNS and Free DNS. We use Cloudflare a lot with people. I'm not sure if this makes a big difference. I don't know what your thoughts about, because most of them, they're getting their DNS from there where they've got the domain hosted. And we just use Cloudflare to take over the DNS record side of it. So what's your thoughts about this one?
So DNS basically is responsible for turning like hqraja.com into the IP address of the site, where the IP address of the server where the site is situated. So a free DNS provider, your hosting's DNS provider usually would take something like 200 milliseconds or 300 milliseconds to make that translation. But something like Cloudflare or AWS's Route 53, they would probably take somewhere like 20 milliseconds. So it's like several orders of magnitude difference in the resolution time. It's called resolution time, the time it takes to turn a domain name into its IP address. That's the DNS resolution time. So yes, it does make a difference. It does make a substantial enough difference to matter. And you don't really need premium DNS. Cloudflare is the best in class in the world. The only rival that comes close to it and like goes neck to neck with it rather is Amazon's DNS, which is Route 53 or Route 51. Route 53, yeah. So unless you are on Amazon's infrastructure already, you don't really need to go for AWS's DNS. Cloudflare is the best DNS provider on earth, period.
Oh, that's great. On to the next thing, but I'm going to keep this sweet because we could have a whole show about this subject. It's linked to what Haroon said about PHP and having the latest version. If you don't have the right page builder that's updated or the right theme based on the page builder you're using, plus the plugins, if they're not all kept up to date, you can have the latest version of PHP and you're not going to benefit. Now, to me, you've got two choices in 2004. You can either go the Gutenberg route or you can go Brits. And now you go the Gutenberg, there's I've listed three here, WP Cadence, Spectra, which is Astra, Generate Press. I think either three of those you could go with. I've also listed Elementor because it's still got an enormous amount of market share. But when it comes to pure performance, I don't think I would really use it with a membership Buddy Boss website unless I had to. I'd go with either Cadence, Spectra, Astro, Generate Press, or Bricks. If I was looking for performance with WordPress. So what's your response to what I've just said, Eric?
I completely agree. I personally use Bricks, but
yeah.
for those who choose to stay in the Gutenberg ecosystem, the three you listed, Cadence, Spectra, and Generate Press with its Generate Blocks add-on, they are among the best of the best. And there's also GreenShift. That's also pretty good. You can't go wrong with that either. There was Quickly, but that's no more, unfortunately. So yeah, let's not get into the...
That could be another whole show on its own.
Yeah. But Bricks, performance, Elementor, because I personally use Bricks and I used to use Elementor. The performance difference is like not just 10x. It's like, for me, it's been more like 20, 30x with Bricks. I just build in a sensible manner and not just throwing every add-on pack out there for just a couple of different blocks that I need. I just build sensibly in Bricks and the results speak for themselves. It's like in more than 90 page speeds score on Google PageSpeed Insights without any optimization, which is like unheard of in the Elementor world. So yes, choosing the right page builder matters a lot. It matters immensely.
Yeah, we've gone with most of our people that want to build something themselves, and we offer a set of specific themes that we've developed or starter websites, is WP Cadence, because we've found that for the DIY, for the person that wants to build out a website themselves, that's not a professional like Haroon, it offers the best performance metrics. But if you're going full custom and you're hiring a professional, you can't go too wrong with Bricks. There's different tools and different setups for different types of people and different scenarios. So it just depends, folks. But I think what we've listed it, you know, you can still have a reasonable experience with Elementor. But it's not going to, in pure performance, it can't match of any of the others that we've outlined. What's your insights about plugins? Because I think the same thing applies to plugins. If you don't keep the plugins up to date and you just keep to the most core plugins that you need, you just don't throw every plugin that you want on. But you've got to keep them updated and you've got to really know which are the ones that you should really go for. That's the key to it. What's your own thoughts on that?
So coming from a self-learning background where I just tried things and figured them out while trying them, I used to throw plugins at every problem that I would come across in WordPress. And I'd try the first one that, like, I'd do a Google search, how to do blah, blah, blah in WordPress. The first plugin that would come up, I would use that. And then if it solved the problem, fine and dandy, I would stick with it. And if I came across any issues, I would look for options other than that. Eventually, I started realizing that not all plugins are created equal. The code that goes behind the plugins could be really optimized or it could be all over the place, utilizing maybe 50 times, 100 times more resources than it needs to. So picking the right plugins for the job that are minimal, that do one job, and they do that one job really well, and they have been coded to the best of coding standards, could go a really, really long way towards having an optimized website. Throwing random plugins from What's that plugin shop? Code Canyon theme for us?
Yes.
It's Code Canyon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Envato. So picking random plugins from Envato for like $40 and then throwing them on a site because they're the first one that came up when you searched for a particular solution, not a good idea. So yeah, having the right set of plugins, minimal set of plugins, and also some people are under the impression that less is necessarily better, but in this case, quality is necessarily better. If you have five plugins, but they're all like monolithic plugins that do everything but the kitchen sink, it's going to slow down the site a lot. If you have like 25 plugins, each of them, few lines of code, does one job, does that job really, really well and efficiently. That 25 plugin site is going to be more performant than a five plugin site with five bad, poorly coded, monolithic monsters of plugins. So yeah, it's quality over quantity over here. And then you have to keep them updated. You have to have the latest versions and you've got to test the latest versions before you deploy them live because there could be breaking changes. There could be incompatibilities with the theme. There could be incompatibilities with other plugins you're running. So that's also important. You've got to pick a host. You've got to pick a solution that lets you spin up a staging site on which you can try out the updates, on which you can make sure that nothing breaks before deploying those changes to the live site. To your actual visitors and customers and members.
That's what we do at WP Tonic. Those that have gone beyond launch and have got membership, we can provide a staging site and you can update all the plugins on the staging site. Or you can hire us with one of our Support Plus plans and we update all the plugins on the staging before we update them on the production. And we give it a visual look over, but that comes with the Support Plus plans that we offer. We don't insist on that, those that are starting out, because they normally are not in the zone where they're making any raw income. So we give them the option they can do it themselves, or when they do get actual paying students, they can ask us to do it, or they could ask somebody else. But we offer that those type of solutions. It could be you as well, Aaron, that you're normally dealing with a larger website.
Yes.
In truth, I'm not. So, but I agree with everything, Aaron. It's not exactly quantity, but you've got to keep some control over it. But we provide a very extensive list of plugins as part of our hosting package. They're premier plugins. We've bought licenses so we can offer it to our clients, but we deal with the support area with some support from the plugin providers. That's why we manage to do special deals. But we've got a very extensive list, but we don't put all that list on every client's website that hosts.
Oh, that would be a nightmare.
We have a white glove session. We find out what your requirements are, and then we choose from our library the mixture that would work for you. That's how you get on. Sorry.
And this is what's lacking from most hosting environments. A lot of people are trying to figure out why their site is just not scaling. Why is it having issues converting people? They don't even know that visitors might be dropping off because of long page load times or being served a cached result that is not relevant to them, that is old, that is stale. So and secondly, a lot of business owners don't know the right tech to choose by themselves. If they've got white glove service, if they've got personalized session with their host, with the technical people who know all of this, they could help them pick the right technology stack. And that's what people like Jonathan or I, because I also offer similar services at an individual level as a consultant to lots of clients when they need to grow and scale their sites. So with both of us, what you get is that white glove service, as Jonathan said, a session with you in which we help you determine the best technology stack for your particular use case requirements, because every site is different. So that's what you don't get with just going and signing up for a shared hosting plan or even a cloud plan with one of those mainstream providers, which is something very important to keep in mind.
Right, so the next thing is image optimization. Basically, if you take a photo with your iPhone or your smartphone, it could be enormous in what is called pixel density. And if you just upload that enormous image, you can crop it in WordPress, but it's still going to be enormous. If you keep doing that, and we give some advice to people when they decide to host with us around that, and we also use one of the more premier image compression plug-in solution, ShortPixel. We utilize that as well. And we try and give some advice, but even with ShortPixel, if you keep uploading, it's not always this case, but it's one of the bugbearers, images from your smartphone directly out, and you don't crop them or don't do any pre-optimization before you upload them. You're going to, if you keep doing that, and it depends on the number of images, you can slow your website. So what's your response to that, Aaron?
Oh, yes, I also love ShortPixel. Use it on pretty much every client site and my own sites. It's one of the best out there. And so with images, you've got to be careful about two things. First and foremost, the images should ideally be cropped and uploaded in the size that is going to be displayed on the site, ideally. If you've got developers working on your site who are handling all the image uploads, then usually that works fine. But once non-developer clients, employees, non-technical employees of clients, data entry operators, once they start working on a site rather than developers, then they just start uploading images in the format that they have, in the size that they have. And then when selecting the image to be included in the page builder widget, in the image widget, in the block, they don't select the right version generated by WordPress either. They might be using a thumbnail size, and they would pick the full size when actually working in the editor, be it Elementor, be it Bricks, be it Gutenberg, be it Cadence. So they'd select the full size, and it's going to just display a 150 by 150 pixel size on the site. And the image being loaded is 1920 by 1080 pixels, or worse, full 4K image. So that is usually one of the biggest factors in sites being slow. Because if you've got 15, 20 such images on the site, all using full size and being displayed in small thumbnails, the difference is going to be like in MBs and MBs and MBs. So with the right plugins configured the right way, those images are going to get resized and served in the right size. But your team also needs some education on selecting the right size when actually building pages, when actually adding data to the site. So it's a combination of a plugin and education to pick the right version.
Yeah, plugging on its own, where it sort of, it helps a lot, but you do need to wear. The last thing, and it's I think you touched it, is for very demanding membership, and Buddy Boss with Learn Dash and Lift It LMS, we do put on Redis, and I've used it on some of my own sites, and it has made a difference. It basically is a technology that speeds up the action database, because everything in WordPress is in a database, and then it's called upon, images, text, layout, it's all stored in the database. And Redis, I don't know about the other one I've listed, was it MariaDB?
MariaDB, yeah.
I don't know if that does the same thing as Redis, or Reddit is different. So maybe you can explain what the two do, basically, quickly, and we can then wrap it up.
Yes. So as I had mentioned earlier in discussing cache, whenever a page is generated, for all the data that is dynamic, like, for example, Jonathan would have his own progress, I would have my own course progress, or Jonathan may have access to different plans that he has purchased, different resources he has purchased, I would have different ones, different course list, different virtual products. So we need to be shown our respective data, and WordPress would run a query on the database, and that query is one of the most resource intensive tasks of a website, getting data from the database. So if Jonathan's repeat sessions are gonna request the same data from the database, why not just serve him the last copy that he had generated in his previous visit or just in the same session, but on a previous page load. If the exact same data is to be shown, why fetch it from the database every single time? So that's where an object cache, a database cache or object cache like Redis comes into play. Redis is a very fast object cache. It keeps database queries, results from database queries stored in the database so that in the next visit, the same query result doesn't need to be fetched from the database. That can improve performance by orders of magnitude. MariaDB is more of a database technology. Just like there are different versions of web servers, there are different versions of database servers. Mm-hmm. There's MariaDB, there's MySQL itself. Mm-hmm. So MariaDB was a more performant version of MySQL, but not anymore since MySQL 8 came out. With 8 onward, the performance difference isn't just there. So that's why I stick with MySQL 8. Before 8, I used to prefer MariaDB.
Oh, wow.
I think you might have meant Memcached. Memcached. Memcached is an alternative to Redis as well. So Redis is like it has become the gold standard in object caching now.
Yes, we don't put it on everything because it's not necessary. But on the more demanding websites that we're helping with, that got thousands of membership, we put Redis on, and it does make a difference. It's been pretty reliable. It hasn't caused a lot of problems. You've got to get everything else. It's not a solvable pop technology solution. Some people say, you put that on it, solve all your problems. You've got to get all the other things that we've discussed correct. But like I say, if you've got people like Haroon or you've got WP Tonic with some experience on this, it can all go a lot more, it will go a lot smoother and a lot sweeter. So, Haroon, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you're up to, Haroon?
So, they can visit me on my website at hqraja.com. That is hqraja.com. And reach out to me using the contact form over there, especially if they need help with something like scaling a website and any of the solutions that we've discussed today.
Yeah, I'll make sure Haroon's website address is in the show notes, folks. Or you can contact WP Tonic if you're looking for a specialized hosting provider and a partner around that as well. We'll be back next week with some knowledge sharing that help you build, market, or sustain your membership community website. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Membership Machine Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and leave a rating to support the show. Until next time.